We're going to go straight to that story top of mind. The Minister of Correctional Services, Ronald Lamola, says he has instructed the National Commissioner of Correctional Services to take the decision to place convicted rapist Bob Hewitt's parole on review. Just at the weekend, we heard that the former tennis champion was, the decision was to grant his parole after serving the minimum sentence that was afforded, or minimum amount of his sentence. But meanwhile, the families or the victims of Bob Hewitt saying that they were not consulted as per what we assume to be regulation when it comes to parole board hearings. Crispin Peary is a spokesperson for the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. He joins us on the line now. Crispin, thanks very much for coming on air with us.
Good morning, listener. Good morning to our listeners of Cape Talk.
Can you confirm, were the victims of Bob Hewitt consulted when his parole application came up for review?
Okay, I think firstly, before I confirm that, in fact, I can confirm that, but maybe also to clarify something quite important is that the decisions of the parole, of the Correctional Services Parole Board are normally made independent of the political principal and the national department, and each facility has their own parole board. And you would imagine that they sit and hear numerous matters like these, especially where people have qualified to be on parole. They would then be in a position to assess whether certain conditions or procedures have been met, and then they would be able to make a decision. And it would not pass, it would not need to pass ministerial muster. The ones that pass ministerial muster are those that have been convicted for life. You'd know that after serving a certain period, someone would then qualify for life, for parole if they're alive, if they're life sentence. So in this case, what happened was that Mr. Hewitt had served his requisite amount for him to qualify for parole. But what we have established is that the victims of the offender were not consulted. And that is quite concerning for the minister, because one of the things that he's come out quite emphatically on is he said that the justice system as a whole should be victim-centric. And this particular requirement of consulting the family of the victim is a legislative requirement. It's something that has to be done, because you would find that sometimes the offender has not sufficiently understood the effect or the harm that he has caused to an offender. And this is a process where a victim would be able to make representations to say, assess how what rehabilitation process has the offender gone through, and should be able, he or she would be able to say, look, from what I have seen, I don't think the offender understands the harm that is caused. Or yes, the offender has understood the harm that is caused, and maybe they do then should be released for parole.
Crispin, does this decision to take this parole decision on review, does this come out of petition from Bob Hewitt's victims, or is it taking into consideration the current air, the current atmosphere where South Africa finds itself in at the moment, with this greater awareness, particularly of gender-based violence that we are currently seeing with the accompanying protests?
I mean, you know, honestly, Lester, I would want to say yes, that is it, but that would make the decision an emotional decision. It's not based on those factors alone. It's based on the fact that our law requires you to consult with victims. And this was brought to the attention of the minister, thankfully, by several media reports and by certain media houses. And we were also able to follow up and actually demand the record of this decision from the parole board. When we assessed the record of the decision, we could not find any record of the victim being consulted. And that's why then the minister said then, in terms of the very same act, this decision can be reviewed. So then what that does then allows the decision to be put in the purview of a correctional services review parole board. And then they review the decisions of the, so to speak, lower structure.
I appreciate what you're saying, Crispin, of the law and the criminal justice system not to get involved in the emotions and the heat of the very of the moment. But justifiably so, South Africans, particularly women South Africans, are scared and they are afraid. And there's been calls for various stiffer punitive punishments against criminals, especially those convicted of sexually related crimes and gender-based violence. But I want to draw the conversation now to the issue of, or the discussion, for example, that was raised in the security cluster briefing last week of a suggestion of no bail for criminals who have previously been convicted of gender-based violence or sexual offences, noting this very tense and justifiably angry mood that the country is in. Now, how do we balance that, taking into concern the concerns of the community, but also taking in concerns the letter of the law when it comes to the constitutional prerogative of the presumption of innocence before being found guilty? How is the Justice Department in particular going to navigate that very, very tricky pathway of satisfying an angry South African public, but also sticking to the letter of the Constitution?
Well, maybe let me also club that with another question that you've not asked. In line with the call for no bail, there's also been a call by society that the national offenders list must be made public. And both of these questions go to the core of what justice is and also what the intention is of incarcerating someone. In the first instance, let me deal with the national offenders list. I know it's a question that you've not asked, but it is of public interest. Currently, we do have a national offenders list, but it only deals with people who have committed offenses against minors and people with mental disabilities. And employers do have access to that information. However, the difficulty is that there is some level of disconcertion as to when do you place someone on that list. Do you place them when they have alleged to have committed their offense, or do you place them after they've been convicted? That's one of the things that we're currently cleaning up. And secondly, what we've now seen is that there's been a call for this list to be opened up to everybody who has committed a sexual offense, and I think that is something that we welcome. But then again, another question that needs to be debated by society is, being on that list in and of itself, does that actually deter you from committing the offense? And that also then goes to your bail question. One of the things that we have to then place onto the record or into society as for debate is, yes, we can withhold bail, but essentially you could be withholding bail for someone who has not committed a crime. Because remember, as you've correctly said, there's a presumption that you're innocent before guilty. But also the idea, the premise behind that entire notion is that harsher sentences deter people from committing crimes. It's also the same logic that has led to people calling for the death penalty, for instance. The logic is, if we have a harsher sentence, someone will be deterred from committing a crime. And what we know for sure is that that actually is not true. We have very harsh sentences in South Africa. I think rape carries a minimum sentence, a minimum of 15 years. But most people have been getting life. I mean, the statistics for life sentences are quite high. Something like 1,000 convictions on life sentences for rape. But here's the thing. Harsher sentences in and of themselves do not lead to they are not a deterrent for these offenders. What is a deterrent is the fact that you know that you will be arrested and you will face the full might of the law. And we've seen that that actually does work. Where in some instances we have sexual offense courts, which is one of the things that we will be launching over the next couple of months. We have 94 across the country. We will be launching 10 more before the financial year ends. Where we have sexual offenses, we've seen that actually there is a direct correlation between the conviction rate increasing and a substantial amount or at least a decrease in sexual offenses in those localities.
Crispin Piriti is a spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. Listening in on their conversation is Tanya Kun. She is the lawyer for all three of the victims of Bob Udit. Tanya, thanks very much for joining us. Can you confirm that none of the victims were consulted in this parole board process?
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I just want to clarify, I'm only acting for two of the victims. I can either confirm that none of the victims had been consulted, and one of the victims, who is also my client, received a letter on Friday the 13th from Correctional Services to say that Bob Hewitt had been placed on parole.
Are you at least encouraged by the decision by the minister to ask for a review of this process?
Hi, I'm more than encouraged. I'm absolutely astounded, and I congratulate the minister for intervening at such a speedy rate. You know, we wrote to him on Friday afternoon. The email was sent through to him via the deputy minister's offices. And on Sunday, yesterday, the minister came out with a press release to say that he has asked for the matter to be reviewed. I think that speaks volumes of the commitment of the minister to ensure that we all comply with the law. And it also tells me that the victims' rights are being acknowledged. So I see that as a very positive step.
The Ewart case was very important in South Africa's legal history and jurisprudence in that it highlighted the fact of historical rape and historical offences that no longer was that 20-year statute of limitations. Do the victims of Bob Ewart feel that after all that has happened, going through a trial process, that now that after only serving a minimum of his sentence, that Bob Ewart now is eligible for parole? Do they feel that they have received justice?
No, unfortunately they haven't. They don't feel that they have received justice. You know, Judge Bum said that if they had come forward earlier, and if Bob Ewart had been younger at the time, he would have had a harsher sentence. So for him to only sit for 3 years, taking into account the trauma that the victims have been suffering, because I can assure you they are traumatized every day. They don't feel that justice has been served, not at all. They don't feel that 3 years is enough. They don't feel 6 years is enough because they feel that he has taken their lives. He's ruined their childhood. So they feel strongly that he should not be granted parole.
Tanya Kunde, she is a lawyer for two of the victims of Bob Ewart. Thanks very much for joining us.